Hello, and welcome to another edition of the show that I, your host, David Woodruff, lovingly call the Woodruff Report. We've got a kind of unique episode coming up. It's kind of a blend. So, as you know, we've been talking a lot about these NBA playoffs these last few weeks, probably my last two or three episodes. Do not quote me on that, I'm not sure. So, we are going to talk about that, but that is not what makes this particular podcast unusual, because what really makes this one unique is that we're going to talk a little bit about some of the players that are overlooked in draft content, and that is the undrafted players. So last week we talked about a few of the picks that the 49ers had. I gave you my lowdown on how I thought the draft went. If you want a quick crash course in what I said, I basically said really liked the trade, did not like the Solomon Thomas pick, can't believe Reuben Foster made it to 31, liked the rest of the draft. So I gave the draft a B+, A minus, kind of that region, but a lot of sports talk in general does not talk about the undrafted players. So we're going to talk to you a little bit about who the 49ers picked up outside of the draft. So we've got a unique, cool, fun episode filled, brimming with terrific content coming up for you on this edition of the Woodruff Report. Again, I am your host, David Woodruff. Let's get right into the action in 3, 2, 1. I'll talk about the NBA playoffs a little later on this show, but I want to start out with, as I alluded to in the introduction, talking about the players who the 49ers picked up in undrafted free agency. Now, this isn't traditional free agency where players' contracts have run out for particular teams. These are the guys who teams may not have drafted. They were overlooked, they were a little undersized, but the 49ers still want to take a look at them. They just didn't get drafted, the Niners are still interested in them. And there are some very good players who have fought their way from undrafted levels to become stars in this league. Wes Welker, just a few years back, Kurt Warner, the great QB for the greatest show on turf, Night Train Lane, one of the best defensive backs in NFL history, all of these, Warren Moon, all of these players are people who came from the undrafted level. So let's get to meet some of these picks that the 49ers got in undrafted free agency. And the first one is a tight end out of Louisville by the name of Cole Hikutini. So I watched all these undrafted guys film, and so I'll kind of tell you what I saw. So Hikutini is a very athletic tight end. He's going to be a player who you're not going to get a lot of blocking from, but he's a big wide receiver in that he's very shifty with the ball. He has good speed, not insane top end speed, but he's fast. Big body, good hands, and he played against good competition last year. I mean, he played for Louisville, so there is footage of him against Clemson, Florida State, some of the top programs in the nation. And I'll talk about this a little bit later, but that's a problem with many of these lower division players who are picked up in undrafted free agency. But he has proven himself against the best competition. He's athletic. He can split out, kind of do a Gronkowski-like matchup issue thing where he can split up in maybe like a trio set to the right. He can play as a stand-up wide receiver. He's smaller for a tight end, but again, as I stated before, he's big for a wide receiver. He's kind of a tweener. So he's going to be kind of an interesting pass-catching option, and it'll be interesting to see if the 49ers try to get him bulk up, maybe become a traditional tight end, or if they're going to embrace just the large receiver matchup problem. Maybe he'll be more of a red zone threat. He'll come in as a guy that is an automatic option to throw a fade to, say, if a corner is matched up on him. Because there are players in the NFL who are just red zone target matchup problems like that. But Cole Hikutini, tight end out of Louisville, guy to watch. Another very interesting pickup that the 49ers got was Nick Mullins, a quarterback out of Southern Mississippi. He threw for almost 12,000 yards in college. Granted, it was in Conference USA, but this guy has a live arm. If you watch his tape, you'll find tape from his 2015 season. That was probably his best season at Southern Miss, but he led them to become a team that was ranked almost in the AP top 25. They were kind of a best of the rest Houston Cougars-like team. Experts were seeing them as maybe one of those New Year's Six teams from a non-Power 5 conference. So Nick Mullins led this team to great heights, and he has, as I said before, he has a live arm. He can make all the throws. He has a tight spiral. He did have the advantage of playing against weaker competition, and he also had some very speedy, shifty wide receivers and big targets to throw to, but there is not a throw on the field that this man can't make. He looks good in the pocket. He does tend to stare down one side of the field in that he doesn't, I haven't seen many clips of him doing cross-field throws, like looking to the right, seeing that his main target's not open, then looking to the left and finding maybe a check down. But that is probably because the only footage you can really get of him is his highlight tape where he's making that deep 50-yard throw. But he looks comfortable in the pocket. He has good feet. He's kind of quick. He can roll out, and his arm is his best asset. So we'll see if Nick Mullins can compete for a roster job, maybe be that third or fourth option. And with the strange quarterback situation that the 49ers have right now, who knows what could happen in the future for Mullins. Now, I'm not going to go into depth on the full list of 49ers undrafted free agents, but I do want to talk in depth about a few more. One of them is a certain defensive back out of St. Francis College. Yes, you've probably never heard of them. I never had before I saw this guy. His name is Lorenzo Jerome, and he is just, I love this kid. I mean, you watch his highlight tape, and he's pointing, barking at wide receivers, talking about he's going to shut them down. He's trash talking. He's hyped. He's making huge hits. He's running to the sideline, clapping his hands. He's clapping his hands in the face of opposition. And I think that this guy has the attitude to make a team as an undrafted player. When you're undrafted, you've got to go into the mindset, I'm just as good, I can compete. And he looks like he just doesn't back down from anybody. He's undersized, but again, he's a gamer. He comes in, he makes big hits, he gets interceptions. If you look on his highlight tape, he makes about 3 interceptions when the opposing team has the ball within the 5-yard line, their 5-yard line. So he makes interceptions in clutch times. He has good instincts, and he's also a kick returner and has good instincts when the ball does go into his hands off an interception. He can run, he can make plays. He's one of those guys that'll reverse field 4 times to pick up an additional like 5 yards. He can break one anytime with the ball in his hands. He's fast, he's quick, he's shifty. I really like this kid, Lorenzo Jerome, defensive back out of St. Francis. He's definitely a guy that will be a toss-up for a roster spot, as defensive backs are always a tough position to project. You don't know who's going to be good, who's not going to be good, and a team always wants to have a lot of them in case a top-end player gets injured. So Lorenzo Jerome, certainly someone to keep your eye on. I want to go in-depth on 2 more players in the 49ers undrafted class. One is wide receiver KD Cannon out of Baylor. This guy was an explosive target of Seth Russell, and he was on that 2015 team that was ranked number 2, one of the best teams in the nation for a while. He's explosive. He's one of the most explosive players in the nation, and he is sort of a boomer bust kind of player. A lot of the balls that he catches end up being 60-yard touchdowns. You don't see a lot of him catching like 10-yard ins and getting tackled. He is fast. That is his best asset. He runs deep routes really well. He tracks the ball well in the air, and he's very explosive when he makes the catch. He will probably score if he's past the safeties. If he gets that deep ball, he is more than likely going to be walking in the end zone celebrating with his teammates. He's also a very good screen option. Baylor used him a lot for just dumping off a short pass, setting up a screen for him. He'd do the rest. He'd break tackles, shift. He is a playmaker with the ball in his hands. And at Baylor, they tried to get the ball in his hands in a variety of ways, and that's the way he'll thrive on this 49ers team. In my opinion, there is definitely a roster spot available for him because the Niners have a dearth of wide receivers. They do not have anyone, really, who can be called a number one target or someone who is a super dangerous option. With the departure of Torrey Smith, the 49ers no longer have a deep threat option. KD Cannon can more than fit this role, as not only is he a deep option, but he's a short screen option who can make plays on the edge. So KD Cannon is certainly one of the top-rated undrafted free agents and someone who can make an immediate impact for this Niner team who really needs explosive players such as him. Finally, last but certainly not least, I want to talk about another explosive receiver, and that is Victor Bolden out of Oregon State. And if you thought KD Cannon was explosive, you've got to look at this guy. He is incredible. He has kick returning speed. He can break tackles. He's done it against some of the best competition in the nation, against Oregon, Washington, Stanford, USC. He's played those top level programs year in and year out, and he has played against NFL talent and thrived. He can do everything in that you can give him the ball in a jet sweep, he'll take it for a 90-yard touchdown. You kick the ball to him in the back of the end zone, he'll take it for an 109-yard touchdown. You want to throw the ball deep to him, he'll go up, moss a bigger defender, stay on his feet, score a touchdown. This kid is my favorite of the 49ers undrafted picks, and I think he should immediately be the starting X wide receiver and the explosive deep threat for the 49ers. I don't care if he's a rookie. I really like him. He's fast, and I think he can do the job. He's little, so he'll probably end up playing in the slot or in special packages, but this is a player who the 49ers need to give the ball to now and often, because he is what the 49ers have sorely lacked for the past few years, which is a top-end playmaking threat. They've got Carlos Hyde chugging the ball down the middle. He is a good player, but he's not going to break off big chunks of yardage at a time. The wide receivers have been an absolute atrocity. The quarterbacking has been an absolute atrocity. And the 49ers need a player like this on the outside who they can dump a ball down to, give the ball in a sweep, throw the ball deep to, and he can make a play every time. Victor Bolden, wide receiver, Oregon State, difference maker. I love him. My favorite of the undrafted class. Other notes from the undrafted class, the 49ers picked up three offensive tackles or offensive linemen, headlined by Eric Magnuson of the University of Michigan. So they shored up some O-line. They didn't really shore up because these aren't top-level talents, but they got some reinforcements for an O-line that has been god-awful in these last few years. So let's shift to the NBA. And as I've talked about on the last few episodes, we are in the Eastern/Western Conference semifinals. Only 8 teams remaining in the entire NBA playoff race, and these races are getting contested. The teams don't like each other. It's getting physical. Or in the case of the Warriors, they're just stomping everybody. So let's start in the East with what's been the craziest series so far, the Wizards-Celtics. And these are the two teams who many experts predict are the only threat to knock off the Cavaliers. The Raptors do not have much of a chance. We'll talk about the Cavs-Raptors series later, but it's been very one-sided. So the series hangs in the balance with the Celtics leading the series 2-1 with Game 4 to come in Washington. The Celtics took care of business at home in the first two games, although Game 2 was an absolute nail-biter. In Game 1, Isaiah Thomas, and don't forget about this theme because it's going to come up a lot, had a great game. 33 points, 9 assists. He was aided by Jay Crowder, who chipped in 24, and Al Horford, who threw in 21. And this eventually leaded to a rout, despite 27 from Bradley Beal on the Washington end of things. And Boston showed why it is the first or second best team in the East in this game. They handily beat a very explosive, good Wizards team led by an explosive and good point guard in John Wall. They limited him. The same cannot be said, however, for game two, which was an absolute overtime thriller. And I was watching this game. I was on the edge of my seat. It was crazy. It was intense. It was clutch. Players were knocking down late game shots. But the story of this game was the matchup between Isaiah Thomas and John Wall. On the Washington side of the ball, it was the John Wall show as he went for 40 points. He got some help from Beal and his other crew, but not enough, especially in the overtime period when John Wall was just clearly exhausted. He'd put his body on the line the whole game. He'd been crashing down, making insane plays, coming down hard on his body, putting it all out on the floor, and in overtime, he just didn't have anything left. But the player on the other side, Isaiah Thomas, did have plenty left for OT. He went for a playoff career high 53 and led his team to victory. It was really just a matchup of two players going at it in playoff basketball, which is really, it's what it's all about. The team stars showing up, putting up intense performances when their teams need it the most. What ultimately won this game for the Celtics was the home crowd in Boston, which gave them energy, and the fact that the Wizards were so reliant on John Wall. And so after this win, the Celtics were going into Washington with a 2-1 series lead. A win in Game 3 for Boston, surely the series is over at 3-0. The Wizards might win Game 4, make it 3-1, but the Celtics are going to take care of business. Luckily for Wizards fans, the Wizards took care of business in a heated, contested game. The story of this game will not be the final score. The story is the insane fight that broke out between Kelly Olynyk and Kelly Oubre, the Wizards role player. And if you haven't seen the clash already, I can explain it to you. Of course, it's better when you watch the video. So In brief, the Olynyk set a screen on Oubre, which knocked Oubre to the floor. It was called as an illegal screen. Olynyk didn't like the call. Oubre was clearly not happy with the screen. As he gets up, goes, and going at about 80% of full speed, runs into Olynyk, punching him down. I mean, not really punching him, pushing him to the floor. Olynyk goes down. It didn't actually look like a flop. I know, can you believe that? We're talking about the NBA and they didn't flop after they got pushed. But Olynyk goes down, the teams come down, the teams come together, players are yelling at each other. Oubre would eventually be ejected from the game. Coaching staffs had to separate the players, and this added to the bad blood, which already existed between these two teams. If you recall back in the season, the Wizards wore all black before a game versus the Celtics as a sign. The players have been chirping. Markieff Morris, the Wizards power forward, he seems to be chirping with every player that he's been going up against. Last series against the Hawks, it was against Paul Millsap. But Morris is talking a little bit of smack to reporters after the games. And this series can really be summed up by Isaiah Thomas's statement that we don't like them and they don't like us. And it adds a whole new elevated element to this series, because not only are they playing to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, but they've got that added intensity because they really just don't like each other. So Boston leads this series 2-1, game four still to come in Washington. If Washington wins, which they should be expected to after their Game 3 beating of the Celtics, then it would go back to Boston 2-2, and this series would hang in the balance. It's definitely going to be an entertaining one, so keep your eye on it. Staying in the East, we're going to talk about the favorite Cleveland Cavaliers in their matchup versus the Toronto Raptors. The Cavs lead the series 2 games to none, and Game 3 is occurring as I am speaking to you right now. I actually just checked, the Cavs are leading. This series has definitely not been as competitive as the Boston-Washington series. Game 1 went a little something like this. Imagine a boxer being destroyed in the head with the left hook of another boxer. That's basically the Toronto Raptors being uppercut by LeBron James. Game 1, he had 35. Kyrie Irving supplemented that with 24 of his own, and despite 19 and 20 from Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, the Raptors were unable to hang with the Cavs. The Raptors need to shoot well from three in this series if they hope to compete. They were kind of smooth from behind the arc, shooting 35% around that mark. That's not going to be good enough. They're going to have to be in the 40 to 45% range if they're going to score with this Cleveland Cavaliers offensive burst. That was a terrible way of phrasing it, with this potent Cleveland offense. Game two, more of the same behind the home crowd. LeBron James and company routed through the Wizards, through the Raptors out of the building. I hope you still have that boxer getting socked in the head image, because LeBron James went in for round two, putting up 39, and DeMar DeRozan, one of the stars of this Toronto team, only had 5 points, so they're never going to win a game against Cleveland with DeMar only scoring 5 points. Kyle Lowry had 21, I believe, don't quote me on that. Again, unless DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry combine for 60, 70-plus points, the Raptors are going to get swept in this series. So Game 3 is going on. Cleveland has taken care of business. They look all the part of a team that's going to win the East and go to their third consecutive NBA Finals. Let's move to the West, where there's another team looking like they might sweep the playoffs in the Golden State Warriors. Game 1 in their series against the Jazz, who are playoff newcomers. They shocked a lot of people with their 7-game series win over the Clippers. Ooh, what's going to happen in Los Angeles? Are the big three of DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, Chris Paul going to be broken up? What's going to happen to J.J. Redick? The Clippers somehow find a way to dominate the news even when they're not in the playoffs. As usual, eliminated in the first round. They didn't do their customary second round exit that they usually do. Anyway, we're talking about the Jazz and Warriors, and the Warriors took care of business. They never trailed in game one. They were up double digits early, and they seemed to be clicking on all cylinders. For the Jazz, Gordon Hayward only had 12 points. Gobert had 11. Rodney Hood put in 14. They kind of got baskets from all over, but a lot of those were semi-garbage time minutes, as the Warriors had taken care of business pretty early in this game. They led by 11 at halftime. The big four for Golden State really showed up. Kevin Durant and Draymond Green both scored 17. Steph Curry had 22. Klay Thompson had 15. It was almost pathetic to watch the Jazz in the first quarter just trying to keep up with all these scoring options. When the Warriors are making shots and Draymond Green is draining threes from the outside, there's actually no possible way to guard them, because if you get close to them on the three-point line, they'll dribble past you. They have four players who can dribble the ball and drive and get to the hole very well, above average. Maybe Draymond Green's driving the hoop is not above average, but certainly with Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, and Steph Curry, if you give them any space, they'll pull the trigger and knock down a shot. And of course, you've got the free-flowing, beautiful Warriors offense that many people have come to love, with screens, movement. They're just impossible to guard when they're clicking on all cylinders, and the Jazz found out the hard way in Game 1. Were they going to learn any lessons for Game 2? The answer was no, as the Warriors again stormed out to a quick lead. The Warriors led by 18 after the first quarter of this one. Kevin Durant had 25. Draymond Green, again, he's become a scoring option in these semifinals, had 21. Steph Curry had 23, and Klay had 14. And that was enough offense to make up for not Rudy Gobert, Gordon Hayward's big night as he put in 33 points. He showed that he is the Jazz only hope of taking a game from the Warriors in this series. I don't believe the Jazz will, but in Salt Lake City with that crowd behind them, if Gobert and Hayward can get going, they could maybe steal one. I mean, there's no way the Jazz are going to even come close to winning this series, especially with how the Warriors have looked in Oracle. But they could steal one, and that's probably the best they can hope for at this point. So the Warriors lead 2-0 in this series. Game 3 does shift the series to Salt Lake City, so we will see if the Jazz can be more competitive on their home floor. The last series going on currently, and the second in the Western Conference, is Spurs-Rockets, a matchup of two player, again, as in the East between the Celtics and Wizards, this is the matchup who experts think the winner of this series is the best, has the best chance of beating the Warriors. So if the Spurs advance, they obviously, with Greg Popovich, Kawhi Leonard, can be competitive with the Warriors. The Rockets with James Harden and three-point snipers can score with anybody, including Golden State. And this series took a very strange turn in game one with the Rockets absolutely annihilating the Spurs, crushing them out of the building, beating them by a final score of 126-99. And they did it behind incredible three-point shooting. They shot 22 of 50 from behind the arc. Everyone was making shots. Trevor Ariza, I know, I forgot he was alive, had 23, and Clint Capella had 20. So when that happens, you know that your team is probably going to lose. And despite 21 from Kawhi Leonard, the Spurs looked far worse than the Rockets did. So they needed to respond in front of their home crowd for Game 2, and that is what they did. This time, it was the Spurs' turn to rout the Rockets and throw them out of the building behind 34 points and 8 assists for Kawhi Leonard, the Spurs star. James Harden had a terrible night for the Rockets. He only had 13 points, and he was chucking up a lot of shots looking for fouls and not making them. So he's the key for the Rockets. When he has a bad game, they're more than likely going to lose, especially a team against a team as well coached as the San Antonio Spurs are. So this series hangs in the balance at 1-1. Game 3 is tomorrow as the series shifts to Houston. It'll be interesting with home court advantage if the Rockets can maybe take a 3-1 lead in this series. The Spurs are in serious jeopardy. Again, if the Spurs win one in Houston, you have to give them the edge, especially with Game 5 coming back to San Antonio. And if they win both, this series is over. So, a quick recap of the NBA playoffs. The Spurs-Rockets series is tied at 1-1. The Warriors-Jazz series is 2-0 in favor of the Warriors. The Wizards-Celtics series in the East is 2-1 to the Celtics, and the Cavs lead the Raptors 2-0 in their series. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Woodruff Report. Today on the podcast, we talked about a few of the undrafted free agents that the 49ers picked up after the draft. We followed that up by talking about the NBA playoffs and where we were at in the Eastern/Western Conference Finals. It's been fun for me. I hope it was good to listen to. We'll be back next week with the best and latest in sports content. This has been the Woodruff Report. I'm your host, David Woodruff. Thanks for listening and tuning in.